Welcome to Innovate 608, the podcast that shines a light on Wisconsin's entrepreneurial ecosystem. I'm Scott Mosley, Executive Director of Starting Block, Madison's startup hub. In this episode, my co-host Mark Richardson talks with Wes Schroll, founder and CEO of Fetch. Innovate 608 is made possible by the generous support of the American Family Institute for Corporate and Social Impact and our media partner, the Wisconsin State Journal. Now, here's Mark.
Fetch was founded by Wes Schroll, Tyler Kennedy, and Daniel Litvak in 2013 while they were all UW-Madison students. Headquartered in Madison, Wisconsin, Fetch has been a company to watch for quite some time. Daniel left the company early on. Fetch offices were right here at Starting Block, but you guys outgrew us, moving on to bigger and better things. Tyler and Wes have gone on to build the first startup in the state to raise capital at a valuation greater than $1 billion with a B. Happy 10th birthday to Fetch. And Wes, welcome to the Innovate 608 podcast.
Thanks so much. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. So CEO, co-founder of Fetch, for those of us who aren't familiar with the company, what do you do? What is it? How does it work?
Yeah. So we run the Fetch app available on any phone out there. Just go ahead and download the app. And all you're going to do is take pictures of receipts. You can also connect your digital accounts, so things like your email and your Amazon. We'll then reward you every time you submit a transaction from any retailer across the country. And then we actually will go out there and partner with your favorite brands, retailers, restaurants to bring you additional Fetch points for purchasing with them. You can save up these Fetch points across all of our different partners, and then you can turn around and redeem them for really hundreds of different options, everything from virtual gift cards to you can donate them to charity, enter into sweepstakes, really whatever you want to do with your points, you can find something and be able to do it with them. So that's the app that we've launched in 2017 and now closing in on about 20 million monthly active users on the platform.
Wow, that's insane growth, insane. So how does Fetch differ from its competitors, right? Other rewards programs?
We always took the approach that rewards programs take a lot of effort and they don't end up covering the items that you spend the majority of your monthly spend on, which is just like everyday items. So we wanted to create a system that was super easy to understand and use, be able to scan receipts from anywhere. That's a pretty easy messaging hook that we can utilize. And then we always think about, we do the hard work for the consumer. We're going out there, we're finding the deals. We're not making you have to sift through hundreds of them, activate offers, choose a retailer to go to. We do the hard work on our end. That's why we call ourselves Fetch. We're the dog. You just throw the ball, we'll go get it and bring it back to you. So I think it was a combination of making it easier than anyone else had ever done before. And then I think one thing that a lot of people underestimate early on is we made it fun. Like, whether you like shopping or not, as you watch your bank account go down from checking out and swiping your credit card or paying with cash, no one likes that. That's not fun. And that receipt is like a physical representation of the money that is leaving your account. And we balance that out with a moment of gratitude and fun that you can feel good about, that you're saving money for something that otherwise wasn't going to pay you. So I think staying true to those couple of things is what set us apart.
It's pretty cool. I never thought about a receipt being a good thing. Right.
Exactly. They were always just the, you know, manifestation of money that you've spent.
Yeah.
It was almost like you felt like you could never throw it away. But at the same time, anytime you looked at it, you cringed.
Right. Right on. Like the old George Costanza wallet. If you go remember that. Remember how thick that was? Right on. So I've heard people describe you as a serial entrepreneur. So when did you start your first company? What was it? And where is it now? Where did it go?
I was super fortunate to early on stumble into what I would later find out is called entrepreneurship and have parents and a support system around me that was very encouraging for me to go and explore it. So my parents would tell you some of my early things were starting the neighborhood car wash business, you know, going and finding golf balls on the golf course that was nearby and selling them back to golfers. Really anything I could find that provided value back to people that they were willing to pay for was really exciting to me. And then I started to get a little bit more serious about a couple ideas. One of my first ones that I was working on was a case for a phone that would also then have all of your credit cards and your license, because me as a new driver always forgot my license everywhere, but I had my phone on me all the time. And my dad was the exact opposite. He always had his wallet, never had his phone.
Yeah.
So figured, why can't you just combine those two? And this was prior to all of the cases that you now go into. I'm not saying I'm the first one to have thought of it, but got a provisional patent around one of the designs. And it was a really good learning experience. Filed my for my first LLC. Just learned a ton of the ropes on that side. At the end of the day, where's the business now? Gone. Doesn't exist. It was a failure. As were many of my early ventures, but I think they were all super important because it allowed me to, through the failure, learn what I would do differently, learn the basics, so that by the time I stumbled onto the idea that would become Fetch, I knew where to get started, who to go and find to put onto my early team so that we would have a chance of success.
Right, right. And it was, were they failures or were they just learnings, right? Like, because like you said, if not for those, maybe you're not here now.
Exactly. And just the label that I think often comes with a negative connotation, but I do think there's been a lot that has been done for the stigma around failure for entrepreneurship. And a lot of people wear it as almost a badge of pride. I think the answer is somewhere in between there. It's not, you don't want to be always failing, but you definitely want to learn from them. So there's somewhere in between there is probably where you want to land.
Right. No, I hear you. What's the saying? Fail fast before you got too much into it.
Exactly. And we still encourage the company nowadays to be very risk tolerant. We'll jokingly say, if you think about what Fetch is, we help you to get rewarded for buying Doritos. We're not sending a manned mission to Mars where if we made a mistake and the rocket blows up, we have lives on our hands. We're just helping you save money on Doritos. Like, we can make a mistake. It's still not something we want to consistently do, but our consumers are very appreciative of the fact that we're always trying to get better and that we'll make mistakes along the way. They're pretty forgiving for us, which is awesome.
Right on. There's a bigger market for helping folks save on Doritos than the old man to Mars.
Sadly, yes. I think it's important for both to be true, but yes, fortunate for us, it's a big market.
Right on. So how did you know that this was the one, right? Like, how did you know that this idea, like you said, you've had a few companies and some have failed, but how did you know that this one was the big one?
It was a shockingly easy answer for that question. There was a moment where we knew we had product market fit. And when that light bulb went off of product market fit, it was very clear that this would be successful. But the product market fit, the funny part about it was actually when the program stopped working. So for the first couple of months that we launched in 2017, the app was working decently well. But then all of a sudden, we had a big influx of signups. We had like a couple thousand people sign up within a couple hours because one of our partners did a campaign blitz to get people to sign up for it. And the system fell over. We could not process all the receipts. And we had something like 10,000 receipts a day coming in. And the problem is, once the technology fell over, the only way to process those was to manually pull up a picture of the receipt, have a human look through it, try to identify, type it all in, assign the points, and then clear it. So we were getting through maybe 3,000-4,000 receipts a day, but every day that gap just getting bigger and bigger. And what was amazing is people didn't stop using it. They just kept going. We were down for like 6 weeks and people just kept submitting them. And we'd even ask them, like, why are you doing this? They're like, it's so easy. It's fun. And I know you're going to reward me eventually.
And sooner or later, I'm going to get my points.
So that for us was the, wow, we have product market fit, because even when our product doesn't work, people still use it.
Yeah, probably not a scenario you want to repeat, but if it's the proof point, you know, so be it.
At the time, it didn't feel like this big moment of aha. It was only afterwards in retrospect that we're like, hey, that was the crucible of the product coming to life. And it proved that this is something that everyone should, get behind and that's going to survive.
That's pretty cool. You guys, I've heard, the stuff I've read, been called a unicorn and, all the words, all the accolades. I'm sure it's pretty cool. Along the way, though, along this journey, there had to be a time where you and Tyler looked at each other and said, holy crap, what have we gotten ourselves into? This is going to be bigger than maybe we thought. Can you share for the listeners, maybe one of those moments?
It's actually very infrequent that we have those moments. I think at any given time, since, again, it seems like an overnight success, but if you zoom into any one month of the journey, there was always things that are going wrong. There's always things that are going wrong even today. So when you're internal, it feels like everything's going wrong and it might evaporate the next day. So I don't think there are many moments in our career working together where we were just like, wow, we did it. However, last week we were in Madison, we had an executive leadership forum, and him and I were walking through our new headquarters, which is just stunningly beautiful and is a good physical representation of our brand and what we stand for. And we did look at each other and we're just like, I can't believe that we're here now. Like, it's exciting to be back in Madison to see what we've been able to create, and that's living well past us at this point. And it was just a moment of, you know, reflection, but then right away it's taken back over with, and it still feels like we're just getting started. So it's fun when every once in a while you have those moments, but if anything, I get more excited by the moments that we have where we're like, we're still only scratching the surface.
Yeah.
I think we could do.
You're still grinding. You're still working at it, head down. And it's nice to look up every now and again. And you're right. I drive by your offices on East Wash. Haven't been in them, but see where you guys now, where you call home. It's gotta feel pretty cool to take a moment and go like, yeah, we did this.
Yeah, it definitely does. And we're so proud of the fact that we've been able to do it with the headquarters in Madison. I remember when I first went out to school in Madison, so many of my friends here on the East Coast were like, first of all, what is Madison?
Where is that?
Couldn't even point to Wisconsin on the map. And they're like, why are you going there? And for me, I've always believed in the Big Ten. And when I visited Madison, it just felt like a community I wanted to be a part of. And even early on, when I was trying to figure out the business and drop out, the startup ecosystem there was so welcoming, so friendly, and everyone just wanted to see everyone else succeed. So people were raising each other up. I'm still very close with a lot of the other founders who have successful companies in Madison. And we're just honored that we can be representing Madison on the national and now global stage as, hey, you can build multi-billion dollar companies here. And the talent here is amazing. And we're going to continue to invest in that community. So we feel a lot in those moments of, wow, we did it. There's also that feeling of, I'm so proud that we did it here.
Yeah, no, right on. And giving back. And, you know, we're glad you felt that and still feel that because it's helping fuel, you know, the next generation. It's helping to fuel the people that are here today in Starting Block. And they're looking at your success and they're like, well, why couldn't we do that?
Exactly. And the answer is there is no reason why you couldn't. So that's what, yeah, those proof points that show that it can be done are always important.
That's cool. So, you know, obviously it's working. I think you may have a winner on your hands on this one. Was there a moment that you weren't sure? Was there a moment that it looked like this might not work? What was the sort of low moment? What was the biggest, I don't know here. Did you guys have one of those?
So it's the exact opposite of the last question. I can only point to very few moments with lots of months in between that Tyler and I are like, wow, can you believe where we're at now? I can choose any month out of the last 10 years, and I can give you an example of a time where we're like, oh, crap, we might not make it. And there's all of these reasons for why we shouldn't. There's a reason internally our rallying cry has always been DTO or defeat the odds. Because when you look at the statistics of it, no matter what stage of a business you are at, the odds of it being successful years from now or continuing to grow or all of these different things, being able to compete with the big incumbent players is always not in your favor. So I think it's a natural experience to go through. And for the other, you know, entrepreneurs that I mentor or spend time with, I tell them it's always going to be the ups and the downs, but you just got to find a way to kind of stay in the middle. You have to find a way that you don't let those feelings get in the way of affecting your decision making. You have to insulate the team so that they still believe. And you also, we talk about our work is really important, but don't take it too seriously. And I think that's really a key thing that helps you get through those moments of doubt is because you're like, what is the worst case? And once you can see the worst case, it's not that scary anymore. You're like, all right, the worst case is it goes out of business. I got to figure out what to do next. And I know all these people. Maybe we go here, maybe we do that. And then you're like, okay, put that now completely out of my mind. That's now, I'm sure that we'd be okay in that situation. Now, what can we do to make it so that's not the reality? And then you just focus on solving the problem. So Yeah, there's not even one specific time that stands out. Like, we've almost run out of money numerous times. We've had every indication that within weeks we should be shut down, and it just we've never allowed it to happen, and that's a testament to the team.
Yeah, right on. That's awesome. We're talking to Wes Schroll, co-founder and CEO of Fetch, a Madison-based Wisconsin company that created America's favorite reward app. Let's talk about your brand a little bit. If you were to overhear customers talking about Fetch, what would we hear them saying? Let's take the individual user first. What would they be saying?
I was super lucky that last Monday I was traveling to Chicago. I was waiting for a meeting, so I'm sitting in the Hilton lobby, and I have my Fetch backpack next to me that just has the dog on it. Mm-hmm. And a woman comes up to me and goes, "Is that Fetch?" And I was like, "Yeah, the app." And she's like, "Yes, I love it. Are you a user too? How long have you been using it?" I was like, "Yeah, I work at the company." And I was like, "What do you like about it?" And so I actually know exactly what she likes about it. She tells me that she enjoys how it gives her something fun to look forward to after she does the hard work of shopping for her family that no one is ever thankful for. She feels like is her little thank you. She loves the new social features that we have because she can compete with her friends and family that she referred to the app. And there's always some fun banter. She said she stays closer with them and just shoots them a random text every once in a while being like, "Oh, I'm pulling ahead," or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And she just told me that it feels like it's an app for her. Like there's so many other apps on her phone that are utilities or that the family's asking for. Everything's always centralized around her family. And Fetch is the app that is universally for her and her enjoyment. And she really enjoyed that. So I think that's what people would talk about. It's a brand where there is this deep personal connection that it is something that is for you. But through community of the people you've referred and things like that,
yeah,
you have this community of people that also are proud of the fact that they're shopping smarter. They're saving money while doing it.
Right.
They don't feel like they're cheap for doing that, as they shouldn't. They feel like they're smart.
Yeah. No, that's a distinction. It's sort of like the old Fitbit, right? Like the steps contest, right? Where you get with your folks and say, "All right, I'm going to outstep you this week or this month or whatever." And exactly. Then it gives you another touch point with your friends.
Yep.
So you said something as it relates to the app, that they don't feel cheap for using it. It's just, you know, it's a way to save money. Is there a connotation, the old school sort of coupon? Do people think of themselves, or is there a danger or a risk of them feeling like they're being cheap, old school version? And this is a way around that? Is that part of it?
So from what we've heard and what I haven't personally experienced, yes, there's this continuum, right, of over here to save as much money as possible. The amount of work and time you have to put into doing that, some people would even laugh and say it's almost like a part-time job. There's a reason why there's an extreme couponer show. And I would not hesitate to call those people that their job is couponing, because the amount of thought process and planning and effort that they have to put into finding the best coupons, to figuring out what store to go to on what day of the week for which items, combining them together, it is an impressive jigsaw that they put together. And that's why there's actually so few true couponers in the US. It seems like there's a lot, but there's only a couple million people that are like truly that good because they are willing to donate that much time.
Right.
We play on the other end of the spectrum. We'll save you money. We're not what will save you the most money. We always tell people that. But we are super, super easy to use. Yeah. And it's almost like the difference between going out of your way and walking a mile because you heard that there was a quarter on the ground there versus just looking down and seeing a quarter. You bend over to pick that up, you feel good. You feel like, "Wow, I just found this. I feel smart." Versus if you're going to have to go put in that much effort to go pick up a dollar, someone's like, "Was that worth it?"
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference that we hear.
Got it. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And that's, you know, the fact that you'd happen to run into a user at an airport, you know, the individual user. What about the commercial? You know, what about your commercial customers, the retailers, right? What are they saying about the app?
So, yeah, we're fortunate enough to work with some of the largest retailers, brands, restaurants that exist in the U.S. And I always love them because all of them are obsessed with their relationship with the consumer, the person who's actually buying and consuming their products. And I love that customer obsession that they have. It's something that we share too. But another thing that they've always chased after since, you know, a lot of these people even got their MBAs is efficiency in tracking and knowing that a dollar that you spend on marketing or on a discount actually is driving real long-term sustainable value for the business.
Yeah.
And in our world, that's just been really hard to track because everything is built up so siloed. So you may know that Wes buys Dove deodorant at Walgreens, but you might have no idea that I'm also buying Old Spice at Costco. And therefore, Dove should be investing in me more as a potential household, but they just don't know that. Fetch gives them a more holistic view. They know who that consumer, who that household is across all the channels, all the shopping that they do. And with that knowledge, they can make sure they're giving the right consumer the right offer at the right time. And then tracking at a very tangible level, is this generating enough incremental value that it's paying for the program? Right. And that's what I think our partners gravitate to the most. It gives them a platform and the tools to actually run their business the way an MBA class would teach you about cost of customer acquisition versus lifetime value and how you
right.
That doesn't exist in the physical world here in the US. So we're enabling that. It's a whole new, you know, thought process, and it's a whole new thing that you have to now do because it just really didn't exist in that form. But I think that's the partners that came on early. That's the partners who are coming on now is the ones who are really focused on being as efficient so they can be the best form of themselves to support and, you know, provide to their consumers. So that's kind of where we stand out at.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you've heard the expression, you know, 70% of your marketing dollars is wasted. You just don't know which 70%, exactly. Right? And now they know, right? I would imagine you're probably getting into the pockets of some other marketing channels because you can measure yours.
That's the key. It's like everyone always asks, well, a lot of investors would say, who's getting hurt? I'm not sure if there's any one group that is specifically getting hurt, but what the reality is there's a lot of inefficiencies. And the nice part is anytime a new technology comes out and challenges the status quo and allows things to be measured better, it just forces everyone to get better. Like good companies will just get better and they'll continue to win their share of the pie as they should. We just view ourselves as one of those like catalyzing agents that is forcing everyone to level up the level of measurement and how they provide value, because that's the way it should be done. That's the way it's done online. There's no reason why it shouldn't be done that way in the physical world.
Right. Right. No, totally makes sense. And, you know, the secret sauce, right, is the app and is it the programming. So let's talk a little bit about the people, right? The people doing and putting this together. How many employees do you guys now have? Where are they located? I mean, we know your headquarters are here, but I would imagine you have employees elsewhere.
Yeah. So we have about 760 full-time employees. We're spread out across a couple major hubs. So obviously Madison, Wisconsin, we also have Chicago. We have Birmingham, Alabama is another big office of ours. I'm here in our Boston office right now. We have an office in New York and one out in California too. So those are the major hubs. I would say probably 80% of the company is located around those different hubs. And then we don't force anyone back into the office, but we try to provide them inspirational, awesome physical spaces that promote collaboration and make it fun and people want to come in. And what we find out and see is that people will start to come in a couple times a month, collaborate with their teams while they're in person, innovate. And then if they're more efficient working from home, totally fine. They go home, they crank out some work and then come back in a couple of weeks later and figure out the roadmap again. So it's been working really well for us in this kind of hub model. And we'll continue to invest in it.
That's kind of different, right? Like, I'm sure you've heard a lot of companies have looked at their real estate. Do we want to keep offices here, and here? You know, what's the upside? What's the cost? And then what are we seeing for productivity? That kind of thing. It sounds like you guys have found that balance.
I'd say more than most companies, we are pretty good at identifying where there's implicit value, which is normally a really hard calculus, right? Because it's not something you can model in a spreadsheet. But we've been forced into it because so much of our product thesis and value to consumers is this implicit value of fun and social connections. Again, something you can't really quantify, but you can see it and feel it. It's the same way for our team members. We can see it, we can feel it, and we just believe that it's a good way for us to bring to life what the brand is, what our expectations are for the product is in a physical space that we all share. So yeah, I think it's a different view than a lot of companies have taken, but it's what works for us.
Right. I mean, you got to know your own culture. You got to know your teams, your people, what's going to keep the momentum, right? What's going to keep the culture where you want it. COVID obviously was that big go, no go moment where, okay, everybody go home. Now, everybody else is trying to figure out, do they come back? When do they come back? How often do they come back? That was sort of on the physical space side. But what about standard operating procedures? What did COVID do for you guys? And what did COVID do to you guys?
For us, we've always had a belief, sticking with the employee front, is that we attract A players. And the beautiful thing about A players is you can just trust them. So when they went home, they just kind of proved that thesis. They were still getting their work done. They were still, if anything, they were probably working themselves harder, which we have to kind of like work against.
Yeah.
So there's no question about like, we need to force people to come back into the office because we don't think they're productive or working hard. That's not the case. We know and trust our employees are working hard. But what we heard from a lot of people that they were missing was that that sense of being a part of something bigger, you know, seeing your teammates, that human desire for connection. And that's really where we're trying to support them by opening back up our offices, facilitating lunches, things like that to get people back in, is we know that that's what a lot of folks were missing and wanted back. So we kind of enabled that. So COVID has certainly done that for us. In terms of one thing like COVID did to us, it forced us to think differently about how we, you know, show up for our consumers. Because a lot of the times, like, we help to drive demand, right? So when Gatorade is launching a new product and they want people to know about it, if they promote it via Fetch, we can help millions of people find out about it. They can go buy it and then they get rewarded for buying it. So it's a win-win. During COVID, a lot of the products were sold out. So the last thing we want to do is try to drive demand. The person goes to the store and is really disappointed that the product's not even there.
Yeah.
So we actually started to have to value something that's harder to measure short term, but you see it over time, which is really facilitating loyalty and long-term relationships between these brands and consumers, where they go and buy Gatorade. They were expecting to get 100 points and we would surprise them with 1,000. And say, surprise, Gatorade just wanted to thank you for, you know, continuing to support us. We're here for you and your family during this hard time. Here's some value. And that's like such a counterintuitive move for a marketer. You're rewarding someone who's already buying your product intentionally. And it's like, yeah, we were doing that because it was a time when people really needed help. And the brands that met those people then will not be forgotten. So there were things like that, you know, COVID did to us that we then had to just learn from. But in general, I think the teams did a good job iterating. Our partners were amazing and being open and thoughtful for trying new things. And our consumers trusted us enough to keep using the app. So I think net of the net, we were a very fortunate company throughout COVID to be in the position that we were in the business that we were in. It was something that was almost helped by it.
Well, sure. And, you know, there's those industries that weren't, and then, you know, and then there's those industries that were, and it's just one of those deals. And I think we're probably going to look back on that time, you know, let's get some distance from it, but we're probably going to look back on that time and hear some stories about, if not for COVID, this company wouldn't exist. And because of COVID, this company went out of business. It's coming.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
It's coming. So you guys have innovated. You've read the market well. You've put yourselves sometimes in front of it, and the market's come to you, or you've ridden that wave. What's coming? What's coming next? What's next for Fetch?
I think in general, we're really excited by the time that we're, you know, this moment in time that we're in right now. I think consumers are becoming bolder and bolder of demanding that the companies that they create value for by either spending their money or spending time with find ways of treating them as an individual, rewarding them, and it's like becoming expected. And it's a really hard problem to solve. And I think we can help facilitate and be that bridge between the consumers and those companies in a way that is super easy for both of them and both get value out of. So I think that's really something that we're excited about. We see a lot on the horizon too of like food in general, which is our biggest category, is something that is inherently social. It has been for 10,000 years. And we think there's a lot that we can enable on that side to connect people with the creators that they're interested in, or friends and family who are trying new things that they might be interested in. So we think our responsibility will go above and beyond rewarding people for all of those actions, but also helping to facilitate some of the inspiration for a consumer that is sometimes lacking when I'm like, what are we cooking for dinner tonight? So I think a lot of that is just coming, already happening. It's already expected, and I think it's our job to play a role in it.
Yeah, no, we'll stay tuned. I'm thinking if you have a particular chef that you like or a particular restaurant that you like, and you know, I think I know where you're going, and I can't wait to see it. This is going to be cool. So you know, we're getting towards the end of our time, but as an entrepreneur, as a serial entrepreneur, as a successful entrepreneur, what advice would you give to people who say they want to start a company? If you were to tell them, if you had 5 minutes with them, what are you telling the would-be entrepreneur?
I almost always start off with just trying to understand why. You know, why are they either wanting to start a company, or why are they trying to solve that problem specifically? And the reason for that is because it's just like the idea is never the hard part. You can sit there and come up with 100 ideas and probably have a decent percentage of those that may become real things in the next 5 to 10 years. And you could be like, I thought of that first. I mean, fetch was not a concept people hadn't thought of before. I'm sure there were hundreds of people before me who had come up with the idea. The hard part is sticking with it through the failures, through the moments where it seems like you're going to go down, being willing to be open to influence on the idea that you thought was perfect initially. And you start getting more and more feedback. How do you, you know, bring that all together into something that eventually actually has product market fit? So I think I would spend a lot of time with that person just trying to understand the why that is the idea that they're going after. And if you find that they have a passion for it, that's the first piece. That's the major ingredient that you need, because then the rest of the problems, like, they'll be able to eventually figure out and solve. But you need that. You need that strong grounding belief that will keep you with it for the long haul. Most people forget, like, again, I was working on this since my freshman year in college 11 years ago. You know, and you start when you're working on an idea by yourself too. My first 9 months by myself were so lonely. And then I met Tyler, and it was awesome because then I had a teammate and you could share it. So you're trying to find out, is that person going to stick with it through those hard times? Otherwise it's just, I don't know, it'll be a flash in the pan, in my opinion. Not something sustainable.
Right on. I appreciate you taking the time. We've been talking to Wes Schroll, CEO and co-founder of Fetch. Like to do this again sometime. Until then, keep up the good work and continued success.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
You bet.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Starting Blocks Innovate 608. You can hear more episodes about Wisconsin's entrepreneurial ecosystem on the Starting Block website at startingblockmadison.org or on your favorite podcast platform.